proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back to Insight on Business, the News Hour. Grateful that you have clicked through again today, as you do each and every day. We're going to do a hyper-local thing again this afternoon. It's going to be a conversation with Sarah Trone-Garriott. Sarah is a candidate for Iowa Senate District 22. That would be in the greater Des Moines metro, in some of the western suburbs, including Windsor Heights, West Des Moines, a part of Waukee and Clive. And we're going to be talking about her, her candidacy, what she's doing, why she got in, and a couple of hot-button issues that she is focusing on during this very difficult campaign season. Sarah, welcome to the Business News Hour. Welcome back, as a matter of fact. You were on with us several years ago talking about a home situation that you had. So welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be with you.
Well, let's just talk about you for a second. Some folks may not know who Sarah Trone-Garriott is, what you've been doing with your life over the years. And for full disclosure, Sarah and I have known each other for several years. So while I may know that story, others may not. Who are you, Sarah?
Thanks, Michael. So one of the primary things I am is I'm a minister. I'm a Lutheran pastor. And I've served congregations in rural Virginia and suburban Clive. And now I work for the area's largest food pantry network. So I work with all of the diverse religious communities that support that network. And a lot of my work is about bringing people together to build relationships and understanding so we can work on some of the big issues that are facing our community. And through that, I get to meet so many wonderful folks. Now, my work has changed a lot because we can't do the in-person things we used to. So a lot of it is taking place online, on the phone, on social media. And so there's still a lot of great opportunities through that. But I really do miss being out in the community and visiting folks where they're at and bringing people together.
Exactly. And that's so important, that human touch and that connection. You know, we do this every single day, and grateful for the opportunity for technology to put us together with interesting individuals all over the world. But it is lacking in the sense that while we can connect peripherally almost, really having that human touch and that looking at someone's eyes and reading those facial expressions really is, it is difficult. And not only for your work, but also campaigning. How has COVID-19 impacted your campaign?
Well, I've been campaigning for about 15 months now. So, as you know, Michael, we had a three-way primary. You were one of the candidates. And, you know, so we started really early in this process. And so I was glad that I was out in the community and door knocking and spending a lot of time meeting people one-on-one. And now it's a lot, again, of trying to do those things online, over the phone, or very carefully socially distanced events. You really have to be more intentional and more creative, which is great. It just takes a lot more planning and preparation to do that well. And I do miss just running into folks and having those conversations in the grocery store line or, you know, meeting people at gatherings and hearing their stories and getting to know folks that way.
And you're also working sort of against there's an edict been sent down from the party that no door knocking shall commence. And as both you and I know, that's such a critical part of campaigning for anything, whatever that position may be. Actually having those face-to-face meetings on somebody's porch, one person at a time, and letting them know who you are, what you stand for, and again, making those human connections. So that's another barrier, I would think, yes?
You know, I think it's helpful that the party has given guidance on that, because otherwise I think a lot of candidates would feel pressure to do door knocking, whether it was safe or not. And so having that, you know, clearly identified as something I shouldn't be doing, because it would be the worst thing in the world if I found out that I or a volunteer had contracted COVID and then have to go back and think about who all did we talk to that previous week and who do we need to contact and let know. There might have been exposure. You know, that would just be a terrible situation. I do walk my dog a lot, and I walk my dog wearing my campaign t-shirt. So I get to have a lot of conversations with folks from a distance as they're out on their porch or, you know, as we're passing by each other. Sure. And so, you know, that we're getting a little bit of that. But it's a lot more of that direct communication, mailing, digital advertisements, you know, and we will be doing some commercials too, to try to reach out and connect with people where they're at, which is mostly at home.
Sarah Turan-Garriott, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. She is running for the Iowa State Senate, Senate District 22, which comprises of Clive, part of Waukee, West Des Moines, and Windsor Heights, a really hyper-local story here today. You know, one of the things that stands out with regard to what you're saying is that even in these times, and it's so important to be other-centered rather than me-centered, and I think that bodes well for not only you, but also the party in general. Let's talk about, if you wish, let's talk about some of these issues that are going on out there. You know, we do a daily business news cast each and every day. And, you know, we are just, it's like drinking from a fire hose when you take a look at the needs and necessities that are out there among constituents, whether or not they're in Senate District 22 or elsewhere in the state of Iowa or elsewhere in the United States. And there's several things that are piling up, if you will. One of the things that this is a business show, so we like to talk about things that impact business. And one of the things that is impacting business from a productivity standpoint, as far as a morale standpoint for various workers, wherever they happen to be, is a lack of childcare. Can you speak to that a little bit?
So this is an issue that personally impacts me. I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they're pretty good at kind of managing themselves, but it's been really hard for my husband and I. We both have full-time jobs, and we've both been working from home for the last 6 months. And to not have the help that we used to have before, we used to have the option of being able to get a babysitter. Public school really provides an important opportunity for parents to have that break to be able to go to work. And so for us, that's been a really challenging time for us to keep working and be productive while also caring for our children. And I know that a lot of parents with really young children are struggling with that because little ones, you know, they just need a lot more guidance and attention. You can't just ignore your kids while you're working. And while working from home is probably a safer thing for a lot of folks, it creates new issues, new problems. And I've talked to a number of child care providers about, you know, their concerns, and they just really have not had the support they need to be able to function in the safest way. You know, so they've really had to struggle to make sure they have enough PPE to make sure that they can clean and sanitize and have those supplies to even do that, to make sure they can hold on to their staff as numbers of, you know, for child care enrollments decrease. And they've been struggling. There has been some federal and state level help, but it really hasn't been enough to make sure that those child care providers can stay in business and be able to provide that support for folks. And with schools starting up this fall, a lot of parents are really struggling with a decision that isn't really much of a choice at all. It's, you know, do I keep my kids at home with me and try to manage online schooling, or do I send them back, and not knowing if that's really a safe option? These are just impossible situations that families are dealing with. And I think a lot of families were already struggling to make it work with their time, with working out of the home, with having kids. And this has just pushed a lot of families to a breaking point. I know for us, it's been incredibly stressful. It's been really, really hard. And so I feel that for a lot of folks in the same boat.
And not only, you know, even pre-pandemic, Sarah, we were seeing a reduction in licensed and accredited child care centers for support relative to individuals that don't have the funds. Iowa tends to play down its support of individuals who may not have the independent funds to do child care. And, you know, people who are living on the margins, and there are many, are struggling with that. And it would seem, you know, it just kind of seems like natural that the state of Iowa and the legislature would take a look at this to see where they can incorporate a better funding system for not only individuals who need assistance, but also child care centers so that they're profitable, they can hire people, pay people, and take care of kids. And that's pre-pandemic. And then you throw the COVID-19 on all of this, and it really does exacerbate the issue, yes?
It feels like a lot of systems and families have just been left to, well, just keep doing what you're doing, but do it even more and work even harder to make it work. And it's not working. It hasn't been working for so long. And if we could invest in child care, early childhood education, and public education, it would create tremendous benefits for our whole economy, because all of those working families, they really need that support to be productive, to be part of the economy, to be doing education and getting ahead. And for far too long, we've just kind of left families to try to scramble and figure it out on their own. And it's not fair. A lot of other developed countries really support families and invest in them, providing paid leave and accessible child care. And we're just not there. And a lot of the programs that we have to offer some support, you know, there's a cliff effect where right. if you earn just a little bit too much, you lose the entire child care support benefit, or that providers with that child care voucher, with that support, it's not really enough to cover the cost of care. And so for those providers, it's it doesn't work for them to take a lot of clients and families that are on that child care support, because it's not really where the cost of care is for those companies to continue to keep going and pay their workers.
That is so true. And we've had numerous stories about that. And it's not only happening here in Senate District 22, but all around the state and in the nation. Our guest is Sarah Trone-Garriott, ladies and gentlemen. She is a candidate for the Iowa State Senate and Senate District 22. Let's move on to a couple of other things that we've touched on sort of here. The issue of education. Now, you know, we're seeing news stories where judges are striking down local control of school boards about going back to school, school classes in session, online classes, some hybrid models. But the state of education, I mean, I just, Sarah, read today, and I don't know if you saw this or not, from a mutual friend of ours who just turned back his teaching contract because he felt it was, A, not safe, B, wasn't financially supportable, and we're seeing this all over the state of Iowa, especially in the upper two-tier counties where teachers and administrators are fleeing Iowa to go to Minnesota where the pay and benefits are better. What should Iowa be focusing on when it comes to education?
Well, I think at the heart of it is there needs to be a more reciprocal relationship between state leadership and local leadership. So at the municipal level, at the school board level, you know, these entities, they have to work together and listen to one another. And I haven't seen a lot of effort at the state level during this pandemic to really listen to those local leaders and hear what they need in their context. And so, you know, our educators, our administrators, our families, they have a lot to say about what they need. And every school district has different needs and different realities they're dealing with. And especially when it comes to Des Moines Public Schools, I mean, it's a very different situation than a smaller rural district. Mm-hmm. And what they're dealing with and what facilities they have and what resources. And so, you know, we have to have some flexibility and work with those local leaders. And I'm just, I'm seeing just a resistance to listen and really work together. And I feel that our educators are speaking and they're, you know, very clearly saying to our state leadership what they're needing right now to feel supported. and to feel safe, and they're not getting it. And that's frustrating to see. You know, our friend who, you know, resigned from his position, you know, he was just so discouraged,
right,
feeling like undervalued, not listened to after years of all of these issues that have impacted educators and public education. This is kind of a breaking point. And I'm concerned about how this is going to just really increase the number of educators who are leaving our state because they don't feel safe and they don't feel valued. Now, I talked to an educator in the Des Moines Public Schools a couple nights ago when I was just calling constituents. And she said that in her many years of teaching, she has felt so incredibly supported in this time, more than ever, by the Des Moines Public Schools in the way that they've been navigating this process. And that's been a really positive thing for her. And so I'm really glad to hear that it sounds like that district and that those administrators are really working hard with their educators. So I'd like to see that that same response from our state level leadership.
And where the rubber meets the road, Sarah, is in the legislature for proper funding for educators, for benefits, for wages. And that has been anemic, to use any other word. I would suspect that you might agree with that we're just the investment. And again, our mutual friend that just turned in his contract just yesterday, as a matter of fact, spoke to those issues, being asked to do more with less. And it's got to be demoralizing. I know we don't have to look very far for a really talented educator who quit a number of years ago, our daughter-in-law, who graduated UNI in 3 years with a math and science degree and was a brilliant teacher and gave it a couple of years in the school system and said, sorry, I'm going to private business. So we do lose some really quality people because of this. And so the funding is an issue. I would suspect you might agree.
Well, and we've realized how, you know, it was always clear to a lot of families, but never more than in this moment, how important public education is to so many lives, to our entire economy. We need the system to be strong and to be able to educate our community so that parents can work and feel confident that their children are safe and being educated. And that takes resources.
Sure.
And so for years, we haven't been funding our educational system at the level it really needs to be providing those services at the level to be the best in the nation. For 10 years, we've been underfunding our public education system. When this crisis hit, it takes additional resources to be creative, to respond, to be flexible. And the school districts are just not getting that additional support. And, you know, we need to be there for them so that they have the space, the resources, the staff, the technology to be able to respond in a way that really serves this time.
It does serve this time. And it is all about, well, the bottom line is unfortunately, it is about budgets. It is about leadership. And it is about being compassionate and other-centered. Only two more issues do I want to visit with you about. Sarah Trone-Garriott, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. I want to talk a little bit about healthcare and also something that's been cropping up recently, food insecurity. And we are seeing monumental increases in the percentage of people, not only in Iowa, but across the United States, that are becoming food insecure. And I know you're very close to that issue. But let's go to healthcare first. What are you hearing when you're making these phone calls to constituents in Senate District 22? What are they concerned about when it comes to healthcare?
Well, a lot of people are concerned about healthcare in a more general sense and had been for a long time. And so I do hear a lot about Medicaid privatization. I speak with folks who work for long-term care facilities or hospitals, clinics. And there are a lot of folks who are concerned about this COVID moment. You know, do we have the adequate testing resources so people can if, you know, if they're safe, what the true scope of the issue is. And then if, you know, if they are sick, if they can get treatment, if they can access sick days to stay home and keep others safe and recover. I was a hospital chaplain for years before I was ordained as a pastor. And so, you know, it really makes a difference for folks to have access to care for that ongoing, you know, those basic needs, that preventative care, so that they don't end up in a crisis situation or end up with a chronic issue because they have lacked access to health care. I saw a lot of people, you know, showing up in emergency rooms for treatment for problems that could have been dealt with in a much less expensive and more effective way earlier on, but because they lacked that opportunity or weren't aware of what opportunities they had, it got to a very, very bad place. And I'm on the board of directors for a long-term care facility on the east side of Des Moines. And Medicaid privatization has really negatively impacted our ability to serve folks who are in the Medicaid population. It's made it really hard to pay the bills when you can't get your bills reimbursed. And then COVID has hit that institution pretty hard because we just didn't have the resources and, you know, the support to really respond to it. When the problem is out of control in the community, it's going to impact those facilities, you know, and the folks who are living in the long-term care facilities. And I'm a daughter of a nurse, and hearing from my mom just some of the failures of our COVID response. I mean, you know, that she was given one paper surgical mask to wear for 5 days.
Oh my.
You know, and told that she wasn't allowed to wear a face shield because unless it was a hospital issued PPE, it would make them look bad. You know, so there, you know, I think there was a lack of a coordinated response, lack of resources, and it put a lot of frontline workers at risk and continues to put them at risk.
Yeah.
And so, you know, lack of access to healthcare, it's all tied up in this moment. I feel like COVID has exposed a lot of issues that were already significant problems before, but it's just really shone a light on some of the weaknesses.
It truly has. And again, we come back to some leadership issues and of funding and budgets. Finally, and I know this is an issue that you are and have been for a very long time deeply involved in, and that's food insecurity. We had a news story, I think it was this week, maybe last week, that there are now projections that even in the heartland, where we are known for feeding the world, as they say, there are increased numbers of individuals who are food insecure. Some are saying that number has really driven home up by 45% over what it was just 2 years ago. You can speak to that on a much more localized basis because of your work. What are you learning with regard to food insecurity in this, the Greater Des Moines Metro, and particularly perhaps even in your Senate district?
So food insecurity was already a huge concern in our metro area and all across the state. So about 40% of our Iowa neighbors don't make a survival wage. So that means they have to cut corners somewhere in their budget. And the place that most folks can most easily cut corners is with food. You can skip meals, you can eat cheaper food, you know, you can seek out help from feeding programs. And so there were a lot of folks in our community who were seeking out help and really, you know, making choices that maybe weren't good for their health and well-being, but it was helping them to feel full to eat that food that's not very healthy, but it's cheap and accessible and easy to prepare. And so we're really concerned that if federal and state level support for programs like SNAP does not continue and does not increase, that we're going to see a significant jump in the number of our neighbors who are food insecure, because people are really struggling to pay the rent, to cover their bills, to get through this pandemic. And when we see more people enrolling in SNAP, that Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, what we used to call food stamps or food assistance, we see a decrease in people using the food pantry network. And that's a good thing, because SNAP can serve people in a much more efficient way, a much more effective way. SNAP feels a lot better to use than a food pantry because you can take that EBT card and use it like a debit card at the grocery store and buy what you need for your family. And it's just a much more respectable way for folks to access that assistance. But then also there's an incredible economic benefit for SNAP because every dollar of SNAP spent in a local grocery store generates $1.60 of economic impact. And that's something that a food pantry network does not do, does not create that economic impact. And for rural grocery stores that are trying to stay open, those SNAP dollars, they mean a lot to the local community. And so we are hoping that, in any kind of federal aid package, that SNAP will continue to be a priority and will be expanded because it's still not quite there. It's not enough to really help people get to the end of the month and close that gap between the money they have and the support they can access and what they need.
Well, one of the things you and I spoke about off mic, and I just want to bring this up because you're living this even today. We were talking about the price of food and some scarcity of products that are out there and what your family, you are both gainfully employed, both you and your husband, and four people in the family. But even you're seeing some radical changes in your purchasing power when it comes to food. You want to just gloss over that for just a moment? Because this is a personal story, and I think it's really important for people to hear.
So, looking at food pantry networks, just supply chains, it's harder to get food. There's certain items that are just not available. The wait times are significantly longer. It's multiple weeks instead of a week or 2 weeks. So there's some uncertainty about how much food an institution can access and what kinds of foods they'll be able to get. And that's really concerning if we're going to have a jump in need in the fall, which is usually what we see because of increased costs for heating and whatnot. In my own life, I've just been astounded at how much more we're spending on groceries. Now, food for a lot of us has become our primary entertainment. Right. So I think we're all eating a lot more and we're staying home to cook and eat a lot more. We're spending so much more money on food. We tend to put it on the credit card and then pay it at the end of the month. And our credit card bills have been really high, despite not really going anywhere, not buying a lot except for food. And I think a lot of folks are seeing that increase in the cost of food because of lack of availability or limited choices in what you can buy. It is really taking a bigger bite out of the bank account every month. That's concerning for a lot of folks who are living on really slim margins and already kind of struggling to get by. Even a small increase can really push them over to the edge where they need some outside assistance.
Her name is Sarah Trone-Garriott. Ladies and gentlemen, she's been visiting with us about some issues that are really other-centered, and not only how COVID-19 has impacted constituents in her district, but also all over the state of Iowa and other places as well. Sarah, thanks so very much for spending a considerable amount of time with us talking about these issues, about your candidacy, about your family, and the things that you'd like to see moving forward. Good luck to you, and thanks again for spending this time.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
Once again, that's the voice of Sarah Trone-Garriott. She's running for the Iowa State Senate in Senate District 22. And yes, we will have links to her website up on our radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today's newscast. Thanks so very much for being with us. For all of us associated with this daily project, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett. For all those folks and for Sarah Trone-Garriott, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.